Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to our podcast, The Greek Current, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HALC staff. Today marks a new beginning. While we have marked the beginning of presidencies before, this inauguration day feels much bigger. And that is why we are excited to mark our own new beginning on The Greek Current. Starting today, the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathimerini are partnering to bring you The Greek Current every weekday. We will continue our habit of bringing first-rate reporting and analysis of events in Greece and the Eastern Mediterranean to our members, as well as policy and thought leaders in the U.S. and Europe. And the partnership with Kathimerini will allow us to expand our reporting and our reach. That is why we are excited to be joined today by Alexis Papagelas and Tom Ellis, our main partners in this endeavor, and two people who know America as well as anyone in Greece today. Alexis, Tom, excited to kick off with both of you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a great challenge and a great pleasure to work on this. Keep doing this really amazing work. I think it helps a lot of people understand the Hellenic issues in a way that nobody else can really do it. Keep going.
And let me add my voice. I totally agree with that. And I hope we contribute to being some kind of bridge between the U.S. and Greece on so many issues.
I want to start with a brief question for you, Alexis. I can't imagine you recognized America over the last 4 years. How do you believe the image of the United States has changed abroad over the last years?
I think President Trump did a lot to damage the brand all over the world. People saw an America which was really divided, which was brutal, shifting away from traditional kind of values. And the worst thing is, you know, I mean, for a lot of people around the world, the U.S. was a beacon of the post-world liberal order. And all of a sudden, we realized that the U.S. wasn't really there. This also happened at the time when the world was facing a pandemic, an incredible threat. And this coincided with the first time that the U.S. was absent from global leadership. All that really, I think, scared people, made people think. And I think, you know, Trump leaves, especially the Europeans, but also the rest of the world, because I have faced this in Japan, in other places I visited, with a lot of insecurity. People are saying, if this happened once in the U.S., would it happen again? Would we have another Trump? Right now, people are enjoying the fact that, you know, a stable hand is coming back. I think today is a day of the U.S. coming back to normalcy, away from lunacy, becoming more predictable, and all that is very important. But I think there's a lot of insecurity still sort of lurking around.
Tom, you also know the United States as well as anyone. Can you add your opinion on this?
I think it's not only friends and allies, but also mainly, I would say, rivals and foes. They don't respect the U.S. anymore. And during the 4 years of Trump, a lot of damage has happened. The alliance that we care a lot about between Europe, because it's Greece and Cyprus are part of Europe, and the U.S. has had a lot of trouble. I mean, Trump acted as if Europe is almost an enemy. And he publicly said that in so many occasions, mainly on the economic front, but he did. So the damage is deep. Now, Biden, given his speech and who he is and his experience, we all hope, and you can tell from many leaders in the world, especially Europeans, that express their hope that things will change. But again, as Alexis said, there's always the doubt now that it's not only one person, but it's deeper than that. Then, you know, what happens? Who knows after 4 years? The leadership position of the U.S. is definitely not the same and will probably not be the same again.
Alexis, Trump may be gone, but Trumpism will remain. Yet this isn't simply a U.S. phenomenon, as you write in a recent op-ed in Kathimerini. You point out that in Greece, Trumpism has also spread everywhere in the form of conspiracy theories, blind rage, and anti-systemicism. This phenomenon that culminated in the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th will remain a major challenge for the Biden administration, the U.S., and other democracies around the world. What insight do you have into the causes of this phenomenon, both in the U.S. and in Greece, and how can we better deal with this?
I mean, that's a great question, and I think the causes are obviously deep, and they've been around for a while. They have to do with inequalities, with the fact that there's a middle class that for the first time after the war has felt for the last 15 or 20 years that there's no guarantee for a better future for their kids, or, you know, there's no guarantee for their kids going to university or getting a job or anything like this. And I think this is a very important part. And I think the, you know, the global elite in the US or in Europe failed to understand that early on and failed to address it. And I think, you know, to some extent also looked upon these people with contempt, which was, in my opinion, a cardinal sin. Now, the social media came into play, which means that people, first of all, can now find, you know, a conspiracy theory or a very kind of off-the-wall kind of position on some issues. And they also can express their own anger. They can sit down, you know, 2 or 3 a.m. behind the laptop and they can send to hell any politician or any establishment figure they want. And this is a new thing. This has had a liberating kind of impact on a lot of these people. Now, for me, the big thing is, how do you bring these people back? Obviously, you have to address the deeper issues, and I think Biden was brilliant in doing that today. And also, you have to find a way to communicate with them, because they're not people who read Kathmandu News or the New York Times. They don't watch CBS or Sky. And, you know, they rather get their, you know, stuff from some site which is not mainstream. And I think it's really important to reach out to these people and try to bring them back into the fold. I think Biden is, you know, he can do that in a unique way because he knows how to talk to these people. He has this like blue collar kind of background. He's a smoozer. He's been around politics for a while. And I think today he was trying to do that. I mean, he stayed away from big vision stuff, from any kind of, you know, big program announcement or anything like this. He kept talking to them and said, you know, let's unite folks, you know, let's solve the problems and let's move ahead. And I think that's a way to start.
Alexei, you've been clear in your belief that the role social media played in what has happened in the United States, both during this last election and in 2016 with the rise of Trump, happened in Greece first in 2010 at the height of the economic crisis. Do you think that there are any lessons for the U.S. to learn from Greece?
Well, first of all, I think had the U.S. gone what Greece went through, you know, losing 25% of our GDP, you would have January 6th, you know, way before 2021. I think the big lesson basically was that the political system has to change. And it also has to take ownership of all the changes. If you sort of blame it on people and if you keep talking, you know, down to people, then nothing good comes out of it. I think that's the most important lesson I got.
This next question is for both of you. As news editors, what do you think are the key debates we should have moving forward when it comes to social media misinformation? And as President Biden said today, rejecting the culture in which facts themselves are manipulated and even manufactured. And we'll start with you, Alexis, again, and we'll end with Tom.
Well, I think we're facing some crucial dilemmas here. You know, why is the head of a huge multinational company in a position to decide who can be on Twitter and who cannot? Why is that, you know, these people have algorithms which are secret and they define the debate and the future of US or European or global politics? Who can regulate this without violating basic First Amendment kind of rights and free speech and so on? And then, again, we have some very important challenges ourselves. I mean, I watch CNN now, or I read the New York Times, and I'm like, what's going on here? Why? How can they be so passionate? There used to be a firewall between editorial and reporting. And then I think maybe not. Maybe, you know, that's when somebody lies like Trump, you have to call him a liar. It's a very difficult balance to find. I think, you know, we don't really have the answers yet. And I think this is a work in progress.
Tom?
It's a huge debate, actually, because, you know, the point that Alexis made about Twitter and Facebook and the rest, that they decided, let's say, Trump should not be allowed to tweet. Okay, they shouldn't be allowed to stop him. But then if he tweets lies, if he calls on people to revolt, do you allow him to use your social media? It's a big debate, and it's a debate that people in the media should have. Especially people who are in the leading media have a special responsibility, and we have to broaden our approach and our reach. We feel, people, let's say, like Kathmandu or the New York Times, that we are trying to be as objective as possible. No one's perfect, and it's not easy, but we're trying. So we have to do our own internal debate and then try to expand in an as open and as objective a way as possible. But again, the problem will come up again. I have no answer. Because, as I said, if the other person or the politician lies or is calling on people to be violent, do you give him or her the floor or you don't? And he'll give you the right not to. We are entering a period where I think all over the world, but especially in the U.S., we'll have this debate. And we're at the beginning, actually.
Tom, a little over a week ago, you wrote an op-ed noting that foreign leaders, friends, partners, and allies, but mainly rivals and foes, saw Donald Trump's America as unreliable and incapable or unwilling to assume its traditional role as a global player. While domestic issues were the central focus of his inauguration speech, President Biden was clear about the role the United States needs to play in the world. You touched on U.S. leadership earlier in our discussion, but I want to bring us back to it. How can the new Biden administration prove to its partners and adversaries at the same time that America is back? What steps do you think the administration has to take?
Well, first of all, they have to engage. And I think Biden will engage. He's immediately going back to the World Health Organization, to the Paris Agreement for Climate Change. So America is back. He, especially Biden, is a very experienced on the international scene politician, 8 years vice president, 36 years senator, member of the Foreign Relations Committee. He knows people. I think he will start calling people. Under the pandemic, it's not easy to meet, but he will start building the bridges that were cut by all the attitude and all of the messages that Trump was sending. So the U.S. has been so far away from the rest of the world that Biden, I think, will be able to cover a lot of distance. But as we said at the beginning, it's not certain that the rest of the world is ready to give the U.S. the leading role that it had. I mean, there will be a lot of skepticism. Biden will need to push, prove, and engage.
Tom, I want to bring us to U.S.-Turkish relations, where you recently wrote that President Trump's departure means that Turkey's Erdogan loses a close partner in the White House and also removes a negative piece from the puzzle of Greek-Turkish relations. There are a lot of voices claiming that this will pave the way for President Biden to hold Turkey accountable, while his relationship with the Greek-American community has also raised expectations as far as Hellenic issues are concerned. Is this overhyping the impact that the Biden presidency will have?
To be honest, it is. It is a little bit. We have to take breath, take a step back. And although we definitely hope that things will get better and the Biden presidency, with the experience of the president himself and his team, will help, we have to see what this team wants to do. As far as Turkey is concerned, I'm sure that Tony Blinken and the rest will try to engage Turkey, because we know that Washington, under both Republicans and Democrats, does not want to lose Turkey. The West does not want to lose Turkey, so we shouldn't expect miracles. But given the situation in the Congress, given sanctions being where they are right now, I think it's up to Erdogan to prove that he's willing to change his behavior. And I think the administration will make a move, try to make some bridges with the Erdogan government. But if he continues to push all this blue homeland and expansionist policy, I don't think they will give him a lot of ground. I mean, it's I think, up to Erdogan. I'm sure Blinken will be willing to visit Ankara soon, because they do feel that Turkey, after Russia and China, and it might be even the third more important country for the U.S. right now. So they will try, because it's involved with Syria, it's involved with the area, also is the Middle East, Iraq, Iran. But as you said, yeah, we shouldn't overhype this, because the Greek-American community is close, but that was the candidate. And that was the senator. Now he will be the president. So we will have to wait and see if his actions really show and are moving toward policy that will be helpful to us. We'll have to wait and see actions instead of his background.
Alexei, what should Greece's prime minister expect as far as U.S. engagement with Turkey and the Eastern Mediterranean and with Greece is concerned, especially as we move into the 61st round of exploratory contacts with Turkey?
First of all, I think that the Greek prime minister will know that there is a much more predictable U.S. administration on the other side of the Atlantic. There will be people both in the U.S., Greek Americans, and in Athens who can pick up the phone, talk to people like from the president down to Tony Blinken, to Amanda Sloan, to others that, you know, they've known them over the years. And I think this is very important, because in the past 4 years, there was no real NSC. The State Department was nowhere to be found except for Pompeo. It was hard. There was no real access. There was nobody who could pick up the phone during a crisis in the Aegean and talk to Trump himself. Nobody. The second thing is, it will be more predictable. One thing that really shocked two prime ministers I've talked to, when they came to Washington, one heard Trump say to him, it was a really bad decision to stay in the euro. Our prime minister was amazed, because, you know, the U.S. administration before, you know, the Obama administration had put any kind of leverage and pressure on him to stay in the euro. And all of a sudden he had Trump saying completely the opposite. And then again, when another prime minister came and said, well, you know, if the president, if the Turks violate a certain red line, we might have to respond militarily. And Trump said, well, this is a great idea. Go ahead. You know, that's a way to get a deal. That was a real shock to the Greek delegation. I mean, they didn't really expect this kind of thing. So I think now it's going to be much more predictable. I think that all these people know the Turkish issues, they know the Aegean issues, they know the East Med, they know Cyprus. My only concern is, Andy wrote a brilliant piece on this the other day, I hope that they will realize that this is another Turkey. This is the post-coup Turkey. This is the post-coup Erdogan. It has nothing to do with the Erdogan we used to know. The other thing is, you know, which I think it's like really important is, I know some of these people, I've talked to them, and they have this fear, you know, they're going to lose Turkey. And we don't want to lose Turkey. We want a stable, predictable Turkey, which will be close to the West, will be close to the European Union, will be close to the US, but adhere to international norms of behavior. But I think some of these people, they're so worried about losing Turkey that they're willing to sort of discount its behavior and, you know, be a bit softer on Turkey. I hope that, you know, they're going to realize this is a new landscape over here. But I think it's going to be a much more proactive administration. I mean, I don't think we're going to see things like what we saw with the Trump administration that outsourced the mediation between Greece and Turkey to Germany. All this is going to change, I think, in a dramatic way.
Alexis, Tom, thank you for joining us on The Greek Current today, and we're excited for this new partnership.
Thank you, and Kalorizi for our new project.
In other news, lawmakers in Greece on Wednesday overwhelmingly approved legislation to extend the country's territorial waters along its western coastline from 6 to 12 nautical miles. The expansion is aimed at underscoring Greece's right to implement the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, which set the 12-mile limit in 1982. Although the move does not directly affect relations with Turkey to the east, Prime Minister Mitsotakis stressed that the move is a clear message to those who are trying to deprive our country of this right. Mitsotakis added that for the first time since 1947, Greece had enlarged its national territory with procedures that are entirely based on international law. Turkey maintains the position that any extension of Greece's territorial waters in the Aegean from 6 to 12 nautical miles would be considered an act of war. Finally, Greek Olympic sailing champion Sofia Bekatoru appeared before a public prosecutor in Athens on Wednesday in relation to sexual assault accusations she made that have ignited a nationwide debate on misconduct and encouraged multiple victims to make their claims public. Bekatoru said last week that a senior sailing federation official assaulted her in 1998. I hope this helps other women to speak out if they have experienced sexual abuse so that our society can be healthier and less afraid, Bekatoru said after giving a three-hour deposition on Wednesday. The government has promised further action to protect women in Greek sport. We have to put a framework in place so these phenomena can be registered and the victims are not stigmatized but supported, said Minister Lefteris Avgianakis. That wraps up today's Daily Roundup. Thanks for tuning in.